You've been listening to 93.3 WNRB Wausau. Real life, real learning, real radio. Coming up next, a show the NSA always loves to listen into and stop tapping my phones. This is The Mike Cannon Show.
Warning, the views expressed on The Mike Cannon Show, or the segments brought to you on this indie media radio show do not necessarily reflect the views of WNRB nor WNRB's host.
This is my boomstick!
The Mike Cannon Show.
I know you're out there. I can feel you now. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. I'm going to show them a world without you. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.
Bonjour, privet, hola, hello. Hello, message to my French, Russian, Spanish, and English listeners out there. Welcome again to the continuing struggle known as the Mike Cannon Indie Media Radio Show for Central Wisconsin. That is indie as in independent media, as in non-corporately controlled media. Here each week you'll get reporting from other not-for-profit and or community-based radio programs from around the country and the world. Programs you'll not hear anywhere else in Central Wisconsin except on this Mike Cannon Show every Monday from 2 to 6. Got a great lineup for you this week, including an interview with a Wausau man who plans on launching a space satellite into near-Earth orbit from the North Central Technical Institute's parking lot early next year. That interview will happen later in the show. But first, a little discussion about our friends, the corporate media. Three newsy items stick out this week. Let's first cover the Wausau newspaper. The Associated Press reported in the local paper the Pentagon report detailing the abuse of the Iraqi detainees in 2003 and 2004. Not only was this report buried in the back section of the newspaper, it was, shall we say, the light version of the report. The report talked about the feeding of only bread and water for 17 days being too long, or perhaps the freezing and hyperheating of a cell with all clothes on might have been a little harsh, but the general conclusion was, quote, the treatment was wrong, but not illegal, continuing, it did not comport with the spirit or principles set forth in the Geneva Convention, unquote. And my favorite, quote, no military personnel were punished as a result of the investigations. Gee, officers, I know it was not comporting with the spirit or principles of driving while intoxicated laws, but I didn't kill anybody this time. And what was truly remarkable is that the longer version our local newspaper did not bother printing, where the general admitted that they placed detainees in 4-foot by 4-foot by 20-inch boxes for days before interrogation. No mention if the boxes were laid on its side so they could lay fetal position for days without stretching, or if it was placed on its edge so the weight would also be consistently on their legs. The general also stated that many of the U.S. jails also didn't comport with the Geneva Conventions too. Oh yeah, I forgot our Marathon County Jail, for instance. Our prisoners can be held in a 4-foot by 4-foot by 20-inch box for days on end and not see lawyers or be charged for over 4 years for any crime. Yep, Gitmo is just like our prison system. And I guess the Main Street corporate-controlled newspaper here in town could not raise enough money to pay for the ink to mention the 4-foot by 4-foot by 20-inch boxes that they so humanely were placing the prisoner in for days. Oops, my bad. And that brings me to the second stories about the always hilarious all-hate AM radio station here in town, who just this last Sunday had a report about the supporters rallying for the Marines charged in the war crimes in Iraq. You know, the gang who reportedly shot 24 men, women, and children in the head? Well, this newsworthy item of the group of supporters also complained, and I quote here, we are treating the Marines worse than we are treating Guantanamo detainees. Yep, that's right. As we speak right now, those Marines are in a 4 foot by 4 foot by 20 inch box and will never ever see a lawyer. Man, when I was in the Marine Corps, we never had it that rough. My last corporate news report comes from this Sunday morning news / yak shows, and specifically our friends at Fox News, who had the first interview with their former Sunday morning Fox show host, Bush Press Secretary Tony Snow, or as the White House Secret Service codenamed him, Snowjob. Does no one on the right see the irony of having a fair and balanced new team joining the White House? I mean, why don't they just get it over with and have the Fox News reporters interview themselves? It's a lot simpler and a lot cheaper. Just have the government directly pay for the reporters to interview themselves. Think about how efficient the government would be then. That's all the news items that didn't make it to our Central Wisconsin or listeners this week, but you're hearing it here. And speaking of Sunday morning yak shows, coming up is the great alternative to the corporate media Sunday morning shows. I bring you Eat the State out of Seattle, Washington. Eat the State has a great overview of weekly events from a non-profit point of view. That's what I try to do each week on the Mike Cannon Show, bring you non-corporately controlled alternative voices. Here's this week's edition of Eat the State, and as always, thanks for listening.
It is 8:30, and we have with us live in the studios once again, Job Parrish, co-editor of Eat the State. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. Good morning to you.
Sorry to interrupt your morning read.
Yeah, well, you're my little alarm clock around 8:30 on a Saturday morning. It's very nice.
All right. Well, moving to national and sticking with the courts, it looks like they had a little knock-knock joke this week.
Yeah. Unfortunately, they didn't knock-knock at all, which is part of the joke. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled 5-4 with Bush appointees Alito and Roberts providing the key swing votes, more evidence that the Democrats made a lifetime's worth of mistakes when they didn't seriously oppose those nominations. They ruled that police do not have to knock as long as they have a warrant before barging into somebody's private residence, that they can just come in. And, you know, how on earth is somebody supposed to know that if they're woken out of a deep sleep at 4 in the morning that somebody barging into their apartment isn't... aren't the bad guys as opposed to law enforcement. It's really kind of a curious ruling. On the other hand, the Supreme Court had a good ruling which got a lot less attention this week. It was contested, which says a lot about this country. It was a 5-3 ruling, but they did rule in favor of a Tennessee man who is on death row, and the case was whether an inmate on death row who has compelling evidence based on DNA evidence that he might be innocent, whether he has the right to appeal his conviction or not. With all of the laws that have been passed in recent years constricting, and court decisions, including this Supreme Court, constricting the right of particularly death row inmates to launch or further their appeals, this is relatively good news that just because a guy is innocent, he won't automatically be shut out of appeals, because that's very much been a problem in a lot of cases around the country with death row inmates. DNA evidence and the emergence of DNA evidence has suggested that there are an awful lot of people in death rows around various parts of the country who might in fact be innocent and who receive poor representation in their cases, and this could help an awful lot of people.
All right. And a judge in Brooklyn.
Yeah, this was not Supreme Court, but it was the case that we've talked about on this program a couple of times in the past, where it was a class action suit involving Muslims who were rounded up in the days after 9/11 by the federal government, and they also are suing specifically pursuant to the cases of a handful of people who are claiming abuse and harsh conditions when they were held in confinement. That part of the case, the abuse and harsh conditions, is still alive. But the federal judge threw out the part of the case that that claimed that people were rounded up illegally just because they were Muslim. He ruled that, and this is almost a direct quote, that the government has wide latitude under immigration law to detain non-citizens on the basis of religion, race, or national origin, and to hold them indefinitely without explanation. That's a very scary kind of ruling. The judge, John Gleason, the United States District Court for the Eighth District of New York, did allow the lawsuit to continue on other claims, mostly that the conditions of confinement were abusive and unconstitutional. One other court development on Wednesday that the ACLU nationally, including a number of state ACLUs, and that includes the ACLU of Washington State, have sued the Department of Defense to get their files, information that the Pentagon has accumulated on peace groups that they have monitored around the country, including, as we've talked about on this program a number of times, groups here in the Seattle area, Ground Zero Center for Nonviolent Action being prominent among them.
All right. So I guess we'll wait to hear on that one, huh?
Yeah. we'll see how that goes.
All right. And GAO came out with a report this week?
Yeah, it did. And it doesn't look very good. The GAO, which is the sort of independent watchdog agency that audits Congress and tallies up costs of different things, reports this week that the federal government spent $1.4 billion, that's with a B, billion dollars on fraudulent or inappropriate claims in the wake of Katrina and Hurricanes Katrina and Rita last summer. So an awful lot of fraud and waste built into the system there. And, of course, as we've also talked about in this program, an awful lot of no-bid contracts and sort of questionable accounting going into the reconstruction efforts as well. So that is an ongoing issue with a lot of the things that are happening in New Orleans and the Mississippi coast, even as we speak.
Yeah. All right. And Karl Rove looks like he's off the hook for a while.
Yeah, legally, anyway. Once he goes to meet his maker, he might have a few things to answer for. But, Patrick Fitzgerald announcing, I believe it was on Monday, that he is not at this time going to seek an indictment. Actually, I think it was the White House that announced it against Karl Rove. This in spite of Jason Leopold's story about a month ago, which he is standing by, that the grand jury did return an indictment, and it's under seal in Washington, D.C., according to Leopold, it's under sealed versus sealed. The secrecy surrounding it is so high, but that can stay there, pretty much indefinitely. And it may be that even though the grand jury returned the indictment, Fitzgerald decided not to pursue it because he didn't feel he could win in court. Whatever the case is, an awful lot of the media coverage around this used language similar to the Bush administration, that Rove had been quote unquote exonerated. That's not exactly accurate. For one thing, Rove had been claiming when this case was developing that he had nothing to do with the leaking of Valerie Plame's covert status and identity. We now know that not to be true, that he was up to his neck in it. We also know for a fact that he was involved in an effort that was orchestrated right up to and including President Bush to smear and discredit Ambassador Joe Wilson and obviously his wife because of Wilson. Role in publicly questioning the rationales for the U.S. invasion of Iraq. We know that was a concerted effort on behalf of the White House. So Rove does not come out of this smelling ethically or morally sweet, but it does look like he's going to avoid jail or a trial. And, that's unfortunate from a standpoint of accountability. But there's still certainly an awful lot of other crimes that the Bush administration has to be held accountable for as well. Just keep plugging away and, hoping that the Justice Department and the courts can and Congress can find some spine somewhere and catch up with some of them.
All right. Jumping into international, obviously a lot happening this week in Iraq.
Yeah. A whole lot going on. We'll start with quite possibly the least consequential, which was the debate in Congress, and particularly the House, over a resolution that was completely politically motivated. It was a resolution pursued by the the Republicans, and, you know, replete with mentions of victory and democracy and yada, 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 basically for the purpose of getting Democrats on the record as opposing the resolution, so in the 2006 elections, they can go and see, Democrats voted against the troops, which is, you know, kind of ironic since every poll that's out there nationally shows that at least 60% of the American population, and usually the polls are a little bit higher than that, support withdrawal of troops from Iraq either immediately or in the very near future. So, you know, the Republicans are kind of going against the grain here, but they don't seem to think so. But that dominated the news this week, and it was, the timing was not particularly accidental because there were a number of other things about Iraq that should have been in the news, but were not because of this kind of bogus and irrelevant debate. One of them being that Congress approved $65.8 billion in new money to fight the war in Iraq because they're running out. This is an emergency appropriation through the month of September. There is another separate bill still in Congress working its way through for another $50 billion for the war in Iraq that's supposed to fund it for September of this year through March of 2007, and that probably won't be enough for the six-month period. You know, that between those two bills, it's well over $100 billion for less than a year, and, you know, once again, we go back to the 2004 presidential election where John Kerry got a whole lot of grief for saying that the war in Iraq cost $200 billion. You know, we should be so lucky if it cost that little. While those bills were going through, U.S. troop deaths in Iraq reached 2,500. Curiously enough, that got an awful lot less attention than when we reached the previous major milestone of 2,000 dead. And part of it was because Congress was in the middle of this debate. Another probably much more significant figure that came out this week, the U.S. Committee for Refugees and Immigrants released a report saying that the global population of refugees in the year 2005 increased to 12 million people, and almost all of that increase came from the massive increase in number of refugees from Iraq, specifically 644,500 new refugees was their estimate in Iraq, most of them going to Jordan and Syria, and those numbers increasing even from 2005 in the first months of 2006, indicating, quote, a more significant outflow of refugees from Iraq in 2006 and into the future. Now, you know, we're talking about, you know, 600,000 destroyed lives of Iraqis in 2005 alone, and, you know, many more coming this year, that getting virtually no attention, while a few extra deaths of soldiers in the U.S., you know, making it 2,500 total, got, you know, what headlines there were gotten. It tells you a lot about how we value the lives of U.S. soldiers versus Iraqi civilians. Also on that front, a report by Dar Jamal, an independent journalist who we've cited a number of times and who's been interviewed on this program. He has a report out that the U.S. military is creating a new Fallujah in the city of Ramadi, which is the capital of Anbar province. And this actually has been coming for some time, Ramadi being, you know, the capital of the province, which has the largest Sunni population and the most concerted insurgent forces anywhere in the country. And according to Jamal, electricity, food, water, and medical supplies have been cut off for the last 2 months, which is very consistent with how they've treated Fallujah and other cities where they've laid siege in the past. Bombings, including random bombings, have increased in recent days. The U.S. snipers are just sort of randomly shooting people from rooftops. And the situation is being called catastrophic by people who are able to find their way out of the city. At the same time, the U.S. Military has imposed a complete media blackout. They're not even allowing embedded reporters anywhere near Ramadi. So nobody's quite sure what's happening there, but it looks like it's really grim. Keep an eye on this one because it could turn into the next disaster. And this also is consistent with what happens every time Iraq forms a new government. It seems like the new prime minister or the new parliament or whomever has to prove their mettle by giving the sign off on the or we have to show support for the new government by going in and massacring a bunch of people, and that looks like it may well be what is happening here. And then finally, we had a report this week in the UK Telegraph newspaper over in Britain, which didn't get quite as much play here in the U.S., that the Pentagon is developing a plan to keep 50,000 troops in Iraq permanently. That actually is about one-tenth of the total overseas deployment of U.S. troops on a permanent basis. And, of course, this comes at the same time that the White House is insisting that we have no plans for a permanent U.S. presence in Iraq, even though we're building massive bases and a huge U.S. embassy complex in Baghdad. Now report that the U.S. plans to keep 50,000 troops there indefinitely. Not at all a good sign. And again, something that that Congress has been asking about, the American public has been asking about, and we're getting stonewalled on by the Bush administration.
50,000 also being the number of private security forces that is the estimate for Iraq.
Yeah, and you also wonder in terms of long range plans, how much privatization we're planning to do. Not just using proxy armies as we have certainly done in the past. We have a long history of that, but actually contracting out to private U.S. firms, work that has historically been done by the U.S. military with at least somewhat greater accountability than we have over these private firms.
Yeah, well, and actually there'll be some more detail on that tomorrow morning at 7 when we play Talk by Greg Palast.
Good.
All right, moving along. Palestine, Israel, plenty happening there this week as well.
Yeah, we talked last week briefly about the referendum that the Fatah leader, Mahmoud Abbas, wants to put forward in late July. That almost entirely at this point is a Fatah referendum. The members of Hamas and Islamic Jihad who had signed on to it in the past have now disavowed their signatures, and Hamas is bitterly opposed to it. They're in negotiations now, and this once again is pointing to the very real danger of a major split in the government of the Palestine Authority, which Israel has to love, and which the United States and Israel are in many ways helping to create. At the same time, there was a sort of escalation in the siege that Israel and the U.S. have laid West Bank and especially Gaza to this week, around an incident in which 8 Palestinian civilians were killed on a beach by depending on who you listen to, either Israeli shelling or unexploded ordnance on the beach. Those being the explanations of the Palestine Authority and Israel, respectively. Israel had been shelling that area of the Gaza pretty heavily all day. They claimed that they had stopped their shelling about a half hour before the explosion happened on the beach. Nonetheless, that was the trigger for Hamas to unilaterally break its unilaterally declared 16-month ceasefire. They then came back to Israel later in the week, a couple of days ago, with a proposal that they and Israel enter into a ceasefire, and that they would declare a ceasefire once again if Israel ceased military activity within the West Bank and Gaza. And of course, Israel has said they won't do that. So there we are once again. We also had in Somalia. This is something that actually happened late last week, but we didn't get a chance to talk about it last week, and the media coverage on it in the U.S. really was not very good. Mogadishu was overrun by and the warlords controlling Mogadishu were ousted by an incoming army, and so Somalia now has a government for the first time in 15 years. Unfortunately, and this is something that was not clear from the media coverage here in this country, the government is basically run by Sharia law Islamists at this point. And so you have Islamists and what some people are calling a new Taliban controlling a country on the Horn of Africa. Just geopolitically, it's it's kind of a disaster for U.S. foreign policy and U.S. interests in the region, and you know, raises once again the CIA had been supporting the warlords that were controlling Mogadishu, just because, you know, they were doing it in exchange for trying to get a hold of Al-Qaeda terrorists, and there's a lot of recriminations going on in Washington right now of, you know, the Bush administration, once again, not really understanding local conditions, not really knowing what they were doing in Somalia, in Africa, in the Islamic world. What's new?
A couple studies out this week. One, a survey from the Pew people.
Yeah, the Pew Global Attitudes Project does a survey every year of global attitudes, and included in that survey every year are questions regarding how people view the U.S. And what they came up with for 2005 was that attitudes toward the United States, toward the leadership of George Bush, toward whether the United States poses a greater threat to world peace than or the United States war in Iraq poses a greater threat to world peace than the acquisition of nuclear weapons by Iran, and what their view of the war in Iraq is, all show attitudes toward the U.S. Among Europeans and among Islamic countries to be at an all-time low. Now they plummeted and reached an all-time low after the invasion of Iraq in 2003, but actually for the couple of years thereafter, the attitudes had slowly improved a little bit, just because they were so bad in 2003. The number of people who had a favorable view of the United States in Jordan, for example, in 2003 was 1%. It's a little bit better than that now, but not much. And the same is true in a lot of the rest of the world, that particularly with developments in Iraq, the view of the U.S. Really was it has been in decline. And this, of course, if you're pursuing a global war on terrorism, it's not so much about military conquest. It's about changing people's attitudes and getting them to not support the actions of people who want to harm the U.S. in particular and Western societies in general. And we are losing that war by the actions of the Bush administration, and we are less safe now than we were then. And this is exactly the sort of measure that shows that problem. We also had a study that came out this week from the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute showing the cost of world military spending, that world military spending was up 3.5% in 2005 to a total of $1.12 trillion for the year, and the United States had 48% of total global military spending in 2005. Now, by comparison, the next highest country was our erstwhile ally, the Brits, the United Kingdom, at slightly under 5% of world military spending, and there were several other countries, most of them with the exception of China and Russia, also U.S. allies, that were between 4 and 5%. The United States accounted for 80% of the increase in 2005, and most of the rest of the increase, interestingly enough, came from countries like Saudi Arabia that were benefiting from increased oil prices and had some extra money to burn. Those countries, of course, were benefiting from oil prices that were driven up in large part by the actions of the United States through things like invading Iraq and threatening Iran. And not only that, but they were, by and large, buying weapons from the United States. So almost all of the increase in military spending in the world in 2005, either directly or indirectly, came through the United States.
All right. And finally, briefly, Guantanamo.
Three suicides at Guantanamo Bay last weekend, and the Bush administration's spin of it, first of all, was horrifying. The prison commander called the suicides, quote, asymmetrical warfare, a flak of the Bush administration being interviewed by the BBC, said, quote, they don't value their own lives, and it certainly is a good PR move, however. And much of the media coverage in this country followed suit. It was all along the line of how dare they, rather than examining why people would have been so desperate as to, particularly how dare they actually conceal their actions, rather than how you know, how anybody could be in conditions where they were detained for 4 years with the prospect of being detained indefinitely, you know, for the rest of their lives in horrible conditions, not knowing why they were there, not having any recourse to due process, not having any opportunity to contact the outside world or be contacted by the outside world. You know, it's surprising this hasn't happened before. But the attitude toward it, particularly not just the Bush administration, which you would expect, but the media, shows you what happens with year after year after year of this kind of torture and warfare and military spending. That's what happens to the attitudes of a country. That's what it does to poison us as well as our victims overseas.
All right. And finally, events?
Yeah. The one thing I wanted to mention, because it might involve some travel plans for people who are interested, is that not this weekend, but next weekend, in Vancouver, B.C., we're having, for several days, the Global Peace Forum, Vancouver Global Peace Forum, where peace activists, anti-war agitators from all over the world, including some really pretty amazing resources and you know, high-level figures, will be coming to give talks and workshops and strategize. So that'll be in Vancouver, B.C. next weekend, and you can find it on the web under Vancouver Peace Forum.
Very good. Well, as we do every week, talking with Jav Parrish, co-editor at Eat the State. And where do people find Eat the State?
Eat the State comes out every couple of weeks. It is a free publication newspaper that a bunch of us volunteer types put out. You can find it when a lot of the same kind of content that you hear on this show, only in more detail, of course. You can find it anywhere you find free publications, bookstores, cafes, King County Library System, all kinds of places like that. You can also find it on the web. Our current issue and all of our past issues are at www.eatthestate.org. As we mentioned before...
And now, the man who doesn't misrepresent evidence to the UN, Mike Cannon.
Coming up next, a program out of Cottage Grove, Oregon. Scott Bergren will be interviewing a mother whose daughter, Susan Swift, is refusing her second deployment to Iraq and was arrested by the military police last week. The right wing out there would like to think, A, it's not that many GIs deserting or refusing to serve, and B, it's not that bad over there. Of course, these are the same people who have never served, nor have a dog in the race, so to speak. The abuse of particularly women military personnel has been well documented if you bother to look it up in alternative press. Rapes and sexual harassment of all stripes by male U.S. military personnel with stripes and bars are widespread if you choose to look for the reports. And of course, it's easier to look the other way. And of course, the abuse of what is happening in that country is also well documented. The right will wave their flags, and a few will serve longer than need to, but the vast majority will get out as soon as they can, and of course, fewer will even bother to serve in the military during this, quote, crisis, endless war on terrorism. But why should they? I know it's hard to admit that U.S. personnel are doing some pretty disgusting things in Iraq, and some disgusting things are happening in our own military. As little proof of the pudding, next time you see an Iraqi vet, ask him this, what is a Haji? Just say, what is a Haji? You see, the average grunt in Iraq do not consider Iraqis to be Iraqis anymore. They are all Hajis, the equivalent to niggers in the 50s, or gooks in Nam. Derivative Haji is taken from the fact that one of the pillars of Islam is to go on a Hajj, or pilgrimage, once in your life to Mecca. So everybody in Iraq, even the Christians, are all known commonly now as Hajis, and is not said out of kindness, but part of the natural dehumanization of your enemy. So when you hear stories here and there about torture and soldiers fighting deployment or running to Canada, know that war is hell and people do hellish things during them. And many, many who ask you to become the demon sit in air-conditioned officers while their children do go to Harvard or invest their monies in offshore accounts. Following the interview with the AWL woman soldier's mother will be this week's Iraq Body Count. As always, I thank you for tuning in to this independent media radio program, The Mike Cannon Show, normally heard every Monday starting at 2 p.m. Thanks for listening.
This is Scott Bergwin of KSOW-LP in Cottage Grove, Oregon. We have on the phone Sarah Rich, who is the mother of Suzanne Swift, young woman, military woman, who is has been arrested recently for being AWOL and refusing to go back to Iraq, and we don't know exactly where she is right now, but presumably on her way to Fort Lewis in custody of military police. Well, hello, Sarah.
Hi, Scott.
How are you holding up? This has to be an incredible just last couple days, but I know this has been going on for a few weeks, hasn't it?
You know, it has been going on for a while, but I tell you what, this is nothing like it was when she was in Iraq. You know, at least we can do something to help her and be active instead of sitting on our hands and twiddling our thumbs knowing she was being harassed and treated terribly when she was in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
Now at least we can do something to help her.
So this is obviously a story that has a lot of depth. It's not, I mean, it's bad enough, the situation in Iraq, and that she had to spend at least a year there, is that correct?
She was there for a year, yes.
Okay, but she's also suffered from what's happening to, of course, many soldiers that have to spend time there, but also, as you mentioned, sexual harassment along the way.
And now
there's other things that have been going on with her, you might say lied to and mistreated by the military since day one, it sounds like.
Since day one, before mm-hmm. when the military recruiters were, you know, courting her and wooing her and bringing her into the Army fold, she was told that if she signed up for the special deal of 5 years as a military police officer, she would not be deployed to Iraq, and that she could travel in other places, and she would make money for college, and things like that. She was told all kinds of things, and then she signed on the dotted line, and I don't know if she read the fine print that said, that the Army can change anything on this, you know, in this agreement at any time.
Uh-huh.
And now she is property of the U.S. Army, is what I was told.
Well, it sounds like they broke that part of the agreement really early. She went to Iraq right after basic training, is that right?
Within a month.
And an excellent article, I thought, in the Register Guard that came out today
mm-hmm.
that covers the story. There's, it sounds like even, one, she's a military, when is a military police person, right?
She was a military police officer.
But like many who go there, they end up in combat roles. Is that correct?
She drove the Humvee for her unit doing combat patrol.
Okay. And can you say more about her experience while in Iraq? It sounds like you had some regular contact with her.
I did have regular contact through instant messages and chats mm-hmm. and on the phone. Usually the computer more than the telephone.
Uh-huh.
And most of the time it was stressed, scared, and depressed.
Mm-hmm.
It was really hard for her to be there. It was hard for her to see the children in the streets that didn't have anybody caring for them. It was hard for her to see the dead people on the side of the streets rotting.
Mm-hmm.
It was hard for her to be fired, shot at. It was hard for her to see her friends being dismembered and killed.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing was hard for her.
Right. And then,
and, you know, she ended many a phone call and many an instant message by, oh, there's gunfire, I gotta go.
Right. So, and again, I mean, that's horrifying enough, but it apparently, on top of that, she was not being as supportive as from especially the commanding officers in her own unit. She was being harassed by several.
There are a few sergeants in particular that were really horrible to her and would pressure her to have sex with them and would punish her if she wouldn't. You know, basically she was damned if she would and she was damned if she didn't. I think I can count on one hand the soldiers that did not proposition her or harass her while she was there. And she was in a camp of 500 people, and they had people, different troops and units moving in and out of their camp for supplies and rest and showers and things like that. So it was definitely not friendly, and she was harassed daily.
It's unimaginable to me. I don't know. We've heard these stories, and it apparently is not uncommon, of women in the military who, for example, the stories about the women are afraid to go to the latrine.
Right, to die.
Right.
Of dehydration.
Right.
That is a very real thing for women in the military in a war zone.
Mm-hmm.
In any kind of combat.
Were there other women in her unit?
There were two other women
uh-huh.
that I remember.
Okay. Was she, Is your daughter, was she familiar with or aware of this, what's his name? I'm not going to be able to think of his name. The first lieutenant from Fort Lewis that just came out.
Watata?
Yes.
Yes, she was.
Okay.
He hadn't issued a statement before she was taken in, but she heard about him and she put her eyebrows up and went, wow. She didn't know what he was going to say because he hadn't issued a statement before she was taken into custody. But when I read it to her, she was like, "Wow, he has a lot of guts."
So what is it you think that finally, I believe your words were, broke your daughter in terms of what made her decide to just not
her?
Go? Yeah.
I think the thought of being trapped in a foreign country, in a war zone, with people treating her like she's not human for another, any amount of time, was just too much for her.
Yeah.
You know, the time got closer, you know, she just got more and more scared, and finally she broke.
Right, well, let's hope that breaking is a process of, begins a process of healing for her.
I totally agree. And that's what we've been doing for the last 6 months, is, you know, going to her psychologist every week, really trying to nurture her and take care of her and make sure that she's okay. You know, our intention was for her to go back and turn herself in the right way and with the proper legal counsel.
Mm-hmm. So had you gotten any warning that the Eugene police were going to be coming to pick her up?
No warnings at all.
Right. Was that so? That must have been quite shocking, actually.
It was very shocking.
Uh-huh. Were you home with her when that happened?
Oh yeah, yeah. I was there. It was 10:30 at night, and I was in my bed, and I was almost asleep, and I heard the door knock, and I got up, and I was in my pajamas, and I opened the door, and there was an APT officer in front of me.
Mm-hmm. Well, that raises other issues, I guess. local police being used in the service of the military. So as far as you know, your daughter is on the way or is already at Fort Lewis?
That's my belief, yeah.
Okay, and what are you and she doing right now in terms of what you want is for her to be released from the military, honorably discharged, right?
Yes, so that she can have the medical benefits to take care of her mental health, because this is going to affect her long term. And I think that we need to be doing that for our military so they're not committing suicide and they're not ending up mentally ill, homeless on the street.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We need to take care of our soldiers.
And you have retained a lawyer.
I have.
Okay, and I, someone from Bellingham who is from National Lawyers Guild and is...
Yes, Larry Hildes.
Okay, and is obviously has other clients and is an expert in this field.
Yeah, he's great.
What you'd like people like myself and anybody listening to do in support of Suzanne right now?
If you want to write letters or email Senator Pat Murray in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
She's been very supportive. Peter DeFazio, Congressman DeFazio, Senator Wyden have all been very supportive, so emailing them and showing support for Suzanne so that she can be discharged for the Army.
Mm-hmm.
And pressure Senator Smith to get on board and be helpful. We haven't heard a single thing from his office.
Okay. I wasn't at the vigil last night, but I was there at the county jail this morning as we were waiting for her to be, for the van or whatever, however she's going to be transported. And I know that I was on emotional edge just from, you know, the whole situation and knowing it, and I think also thinking on the way over there about my own two daughters who are in their 20s, and I mean, you could see it in the whole group, not only the emotion, I think the concern and probably fear, worry for Suzanne, but also, of course, the frustration and anger from this whole war situation.
Yeah.
My understanding is that you have been active, at least opposed to the war from the beginning.
Yes, absolutely.
And I've talked to actually several parents who are in this same situation in the Military Family Speak Out and Gold Star.
I'm part of Military Family Speak Out.
Okay, that makes sense. Gold Star, Families for Peace, those folks who you know, there's this kind of contradiction. They're against the war, but they have a young person who decides to go into the military. And
exactly.
How did that feel to you when you, that process? I mean, obviously it's not just one feeling, but...
What feels to me?
When your daughter came out of high school, because she basically joined right out of high school, is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Astonishing.
Mm-hmm.
Astonishing that she would come from an educated peace activist home and decide to go into the military.
Do you have an idea what was she seeking in the military? Do you know?
I think she was seeking an education, travel, something different. She felt like she was in a rut, I think.
Uh-huh.
And instead of really saying, what can we do, Mom? How can you help me?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because I would do anything for my kids, she decided to listen to the recruiters who were calling the house and join the military.
And has she shared any thoughts on, I know this is, people don't like to speak for their kids, the folks I'm talking about, you know, but
she wants to be a counter-military recruiter.
She wants to be
she believes that they are, she wants to do the work that I'm doing, letting people know what really goes on when you sign on the dotted line and get into that military. You know, I'm not anti-military. I really believe that if we use the military as peacekeepers instead of world police,
mm-hmm.
That we could be more effective. I don't believe in war, and I don't believe in killing.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in being peaceful,
right.
and solving conflict with words, not guns. And I think that the military has got some, you know, from the top down is not healthy, and they need to find a different way of representing our country.
What are your concerns about your daughter, Suzanne, right now and the situation she's in right now?
Right now, I'm hoping that her physical health is okay, and I'm hoping that she, I'm really concerned that they're treating her horribly.
Mm-hmm.
I'm concerned that they're cutting her down and treating her the way they treated her when she was in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
I'm worried that they are using everything that I have done and said for her against her.
Mm-hmm.
I'm worried that they're interrogating her. I don't know, you know, I don't know what they're going to do, if they're going to use Gestapo tactics or what they're going to do, but I'm sad and concerned.
Is your lawyer able to give you any sense of what kind of contact you're going to be able to have with,
no,
with her?
No, not yet. He hasn't.
Okay, so we don't know what the military regulations are in terms of
no.
contact. Wow. I think obviously there's a lot of us whose thoughts and heart goes out to both you and Suzanne and... people will do whatever they can. Let's hope we have some good opportunities to help her out and get her out of this situation as soon as possible.
Thank you. And if I know that some people want to, I hate asking for money, but if they want to donate money mm-hmm. or, you know, contribute to her legal defense or her medical costs,
mm-hmm.
They can get a hold of the CALC office.
Okay.
And they will know what to do.
Okay. I will, I'll do an add-on to this interview with more of the details on where people can contact and stuff like that.
Great.
Okay. Is there anything else you'd like to share with people? Again, knowing that this is potentially going to be heard from people across the country.
Just to keep the faith. I really have a lot of hope in our country and in our world, and I know that Suzanne is a courageous, courageous, strong young woman, and that this is all happening for a reason. This is really happening for a reason, and I just have complete faith that this is all going to go well, and we're going to change the way the military is treating our young women and the mental health of our soldiers that are being deployed, you know, three or four times in couple years
mm-hmm.
to war zones.
Okay, well, obviously this is one more situation that's bringing attention, hopefully a large amount of focus on the conditions that our young people are serving under in the military and in Iraq and Afghanistan, you name it. And
yeah.
Not to mention, I believe it's the Military Families Speak Out who say, bring them home and take care of them when they get home. And that's what this
right.
is about.
That's right.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Sarah.
And thank you, Scott.
The best to you and your family. And please let us know either directly or through others what we can do if other things come up, situation changes, whatever.
All right. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Bye.
I was talking to Sarah Rich, who's the mother of U.S. Army Specialist Suzanne Swift of Eugene, who was arrested late Sunday evening for refusing to deploy to Iraq for a second time, and who is now presumably at Fort Lewis under guard, and we're waiting to see what will happen with that. And I want to give you some contact information if you are willing to spend a little bit of time in support of Suzanne Swift. Those contact information is that Sarah mentioned CALC, which is Community Alliance of Lane County here in Eugene, Oregon. And you can call them at 541-485-1755. And that information is also, it's a good number to call if you're in the Eugene area or anywhere and want information on your situation, perhaps, if you're in the military, or information on recruiting, counter-recruiting in the military. I'll also give the some contact information for some of the senators and congresspeople that Sarah asked that folks contact. The person that she said we need to pressure is Senator Gordon Smith of Oregon. His phone number is 541-465-6750. That's his local office here in Oregon. Or call also for support Ron Wyden, Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon, at 541-431-0229. And Congressman Peter DeFazio, also of Oregon, his number, 541-465-6732. Also, Sarah mentioned that Senator Patty Murray of Washington has been very supportive, and she asked that folks contact Senator Patty Murray and encourage her to continue to support, and thank her, of course, for the support up to this time. Her phone number is 253-572-3636. This is Scott Berguin of KSOW-LP in Cottage Grove, Oregon.
Choice is an illusion created between those with power and those without.
What do all men with power want? More power.
Now they knew who was master and leader. Sheep, thought I.
You said we're headed to war in Iraq. I don't know why you say that. I hope we're not headed to war in Iraq. I'm the person who gets to decide, not you.
Remorse for what? You people have done everything in the world to me. Doesn't that give me equal right? I can do anything I want to you people at any time I want to, because that's what you've done to me. If you spit in my face and smack me in the mouth and throw me in solitary confinement for nothing, what do you think's going to happen when I get out of here? Well, I haven't done enough. I might be ashamed of that for not doing enough. For not doing enough. For not being more perceptive. For not being aware enough. For not being scared. For being stupid. Maybe I should have killed 400 or 500 people, then I would have felt better. And when I felt like I really offered society something I can. But I find more real in the world that I'm in than I do the tinsel. And the real world is the one I have to deal with every day. Believe me, if I started murdering people, they'd be nothing left.
Chemical weapons threat. Terrorists, dangerous guy.
There are some who feel like that, you know, the conditions are such that they can attack us there. My answer is bring them on.
As of Monday, June 19, 2006, 2,501 United States military personnel had died in Iraq since the start of the invasion. 18,491 United States military personnel had been wounded, over 9,000 of which had suffered grievous injuries such as amputations. 214 other coalition forces had also been killed.
Join us or die.
According to the British medical journal Lancet, over 100,000 Iraqi civilians had died since the start of the invasion.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier. Just so long as I'm the dictator.
What do you see when you're in the dark and the demons come?
And now, the man who refuses to ease media ownership rules, Mike Cannon.
Thanks for tuning in to this indie media radio program, The Mike Cannon Show. Each week we try to bring you alternative information produced out of other not-for-profit and or community radio stations from around the country and the world. This way you can hear voices and opinions not based on what the giant megacorporations want you to hear, but real information you'll hear nowhere else in central Wisconsin except each week on this indie media radio program. And now a word about this WNRB, low-power, not-for-profit community radio station you are listening to now.
Thank you, thank you. And now the winner of the best Central Wisconsin community radio station as voted by us computer voices, WNRB.
Right now what you're listening to is what the industry calls low-power community radio. Actually, the, quote, industry fought tooth and nail against allowing low-power community-based stations like this WNRB from even existing. The radio and broadcast industry has a stranglehold on all the airways, and the six megacorporations would like to keep it that way. That's why when the Republican-controlled FCC met a few years ago to discuss how to reorganize the standards for media consolidation, you, the public, spoke out and said, hey, wait a minute. We want more local control radio stations, ones that will play the kind of music I want to hear and give more local news, not the pre-recorded music lists that are beamed from New York or the weather forecasts sent to us from Atlanta. We want more local options. And that's why WNRB exists now. So when the FCC and Congress received over 2 million letters in protest, the FCC relented and gave us what you're hearing now, low-power community radio. The megacorporations were not pleased, but they were able to force into legislation measures to assure their corporate profits would not be affected by restricting us, like having no radios advertising, for example. So even though we live in a free society and some person or event might want to pay for airtime, these low-power stations like WNRB can have none of that. They must get their funding sources from somewhere else. Gratefully, NTC was nice enough to offer up a lot of room and resources to bring to you this non-corporate, locally controlled, low-power community radio station you are listening to now. So how can you, the public, support this grassroots community resource, WNRB? Well, the easiest is to do what you're doing right now. Just listen to us. We, the volunteers here at WNRB, we all believe in Central Wisconsin should have a non-corporate voice in the airways wilderness. If you do too, then just listen to us. You can also help by telling your friends about the station. Or, if you're really adventurous, do what we, WNRB volunteers, are doing. Come in and do a show. And it is a lot of fun. You can produce your own shows like this one. Or perhaps you have other interests that other members of the Central Wisconsin community might find enjoyable. Perhaps you always dreamt of being a DJ and spinning your own music. Well, here's your chance. Consider giving Dino, our WNRB station manager, a call and pitch a show idea to him. We still have about 15 hours a week of airtime available. No, we don't want you to fill all that time. Just pick an hour or two a week that you have free and join the fun that is the WNRB community. Again, you can contact Dino at 675-3331 extension 4035. That is 675-3331, which is the number to NTC who's hosting this station, and then dial the extension 4035 and talk to Dino. Again, thank you for listening to WNRB, Central Wisconsin Community Radio Station.
I have many skills.
Well, I don't even have any good skills.
What do you mean?
You know, like nunchuck skills, bow hunting skills, computer hacking skills. Girls only want boyfriends who have great skill.
And once again, if you're interested in helping out with WNRB, the community radio station here in Wausau, Wisconsin, and developing more skills, you can contact Dino. Dino's telephone number is 675-3331, extension 4035. Again, Dino, the station manager for WNRB, his telephone number is 675-3331, extension 4035.
Now, the sort of person we're looking for is an aggressive, drunken lout with the intelligence of a four-year-old and the sexual sophistication of a donkey.
Sit back, relax, breathe in. Slowly, there you go. Enjoy the Mike Cannon Show.
And now a short musical interlude. 2006. A Spaced Oddity.
She's doing a fine job of coordinating interagency. She's doing what it should be. Which is the goal of the National Security Advisor is to not only provide good advice to the President, which she does on a regular basis. I value her judgment and her intelligence. But her job is also to deal interagency and to help unstick things that may get stuck. Best way to put it. But unstick her. And is she listening? Okay, well, she's doing a fine job. But her job is also to deal interagency and to help unstick things that may get stuck. Best way to put it. She's an unsticker. And is she listening? Okay, well, she's doing a fine job. And to help unstick things that may get stuck. Best way to put it. An unsticker. And she listening? Very well. She's doing a fine job. And to help unstick things that may get stuck. That's what it's called. It's an unsticker. It's an unsticker.
Hey there, sexy. Have you come to play? That's right, big boy. Enjoy the Mike Cannon Show.
You have been listening to 93.3 WNRB Wausau. Real life, real learning, real radio.